Okay, today I have on the phone Chris Bergeron. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dave. How about you?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for joining me today. And I just want to say that this is a follow-up interview from one we did, what's it been, a couple years now?
It'll be, I think, about 2 years this October.
That sounds about right. And let's cover some different ground and kind of let people know kind of where you were at the very beginning, where you were the last time we talked, and kind of what's happened between the last time we talked and now. So, you know, I really want to focus on the journey, because this is a journey. And you've been at least one period of time in your life very heavy. Refresh us on where you've been.
My highest weight ever was in the neighborhood of 240 pounds, wearing a lady's size 20. And that was about 2.5 years ago.
Okay. And you've also, I'm thinking it's probably now, but this is probably the lightest you've been since when?
Since my teenage years.
Okay.
Maybe 16, 17 years old.
16, 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, say maybe the last 3 or 4 years, because you're only like 19 or 20 now. Oh,
right.
No, sorry.
Yeah. So it's about 20 to 25 years ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on the outside, it would seem that, you know, we've got, which we do, an amazing transformation, a person who's accomplished something that very few people do, and man, oh man, she went from 240 to 140-ish, and
exactly.
It's been a bed of roses. I mean, we have taken a straight line like a jet going from Illinois to Florida, and we have accomplished a 100-pound loss. Well, not so fast, right?
Not so much, no.
All right. You got down, and the last time we talked, you were going for, a $1,000 challenge at the end of the year.
Right.
And you got down to the 160s, I believe.
Yeah, it was probably around mid-60s, 165 to 167, something like that, I think.
All right, so why don't you do this? Why don't you take us from that point and tell us kind of, you know, in periods, months or whatever, what has happened with your weight and your transformation between then and now?
Okay. So that was October 2003. From there, probably till the end of that year, I continued to lose to about 150 pounds. That was kind of my goal at that point. And when I kind of got to the 150 range, I thought, okay, I'd like to go for gold and hit the full 100, bringing me into around 140. So I continued to sort of do that through the beginning of the spring of 2004. And then in March, I had some surgery. I had a tummy tuck and some augmentation to get rid of some of the loose skin and stuff like that.
Right.
So that was in March.
Okay.
And I was home, inactive for 5 weeks. Couldn't really do any exercise. And, well, if you can't exercise, then that's free license to eat, right?
Well, not only that, but anytime you're recovering from a sickness, an illness, or a surgery, you revert to a four-year-old.
That's right. And calories don't count.
No. And we want to have chicken soup to feel good. Except it's not chicken soup.
No, it was a chicken soup would have been tame. It was really frightening to have come so far and to fall back so easily into those bad habits, but I did. And I gained probably about 15 pounds over that 5 or 6 week period till I got back to work at the sort of mid-April.
All right, so let me just think about this a second. So you didn't really get much below 150.
No.
Then you had the surgery, and then you, which this is not critical, it just is, and I talk about it a lot. It's extremely common. We all do it to some degree. Some just do it more than others, and some learn and grow from it. But when we have a surgery or we're sick or we're really down, we'll a lot of times revert back to that four-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So when you did that, that's when you're saying that you went up about 15 pounds. So now you're back into the mid-160s.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so got back to work and thought, okay, enough is enough. And I don't know if it was being back at work and being back in the routine, but I adapted my old routine of eating well and getting to the gym 5 days a week. And slowly made my way back sort of to the low 150 range. So that puts us probably about the summer of 2004. So about a year ago, or a little more than a year ago. And then for the next year, because really, that's about what it was. Well, I guess through 2004 anyways, I considered myself to be in action, still wanting to lose that extra weight to get down to 140. And I would have told anybody that I was in action, but in reality, I wasn't acting as though I was in action.
You were in the stage before, which is probably more like either preparation or even the one before that, which is contemplation.
Yeah, well, it was kind of like I was doing a lot of things right. I was still exercising. I was eating well and clean for 4 or 5 days a week, but I started getting back into that weekend mentality, and, well, I look pretty good, so it's not such a big deal anymore, and I guess the fire was kind of gone. So I pretty much maintained my weight, but never really got any further towards my goal, and that probably carried on till towards the end of 2004, when I came up with this brilliant idea of this foolproof leverage.
Foolproof, here it goes.
Yeah, foolproof leverage.
All right.
So, because it was foolproof, I failed. Basically, it wasn't foolproof, and the right things were not in place, and it became a real stressful thing in a not positive way, and I dropped out of it, and was so upset with myself that I really rebelled, and I'll show everybody, and proceeded to put on 20 pounds this time.
What'd you go up to?
I scared myself at 172.
Let me back up a second here, and
yep.
You can, and feel free to leave out the personal names or even relationship, but let's just say relative or whatever.
Right.
And let's talk about that leverage, because I think it's important, and one of the things is there's a couple of lessons here, and one of them is that when someone comes up with what they believe is an incredibly good leverage, like the one you almost had,
mm-hmm.
I really stress that members tell me about it early,
right,
so that I can kind of head off things that I already know are problems in leveraging, because I'm not saying I've seen it all, but I've definitely seen more than anyone else when it comes to leveraging.
Right.
And I'm able to more critically evaluate whether it's good or not. So back up, let's talk about this wonderful leverage. And this isn't to be critical of anyone involved or even of the leverage. This is to learn.
No, it was a learning experience for sure.
Right. So tell us what you did, because you didn't contact me at first.
Nope.
I know you announced it on the board, but I don't think I caught it right away. Or I may not have caught it at all until it was, like, I don't know, maybe weeks later. I don't really remember. So catch us up and tell us what you did.
Okay, so what I did was I had a deal, and it was my brother who was going to be the leverage holder.
Okay.
The deal was I was preparing to go south. We were going south at the end of February. So, you know, bikini weather, the whole bit. And I really... my goal was to get back to my original goal weight of 140. So I think there was probably about 12 weeks that I had to lose about 20 or so pounds.
And you were starting, at 160-ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
At that point, I was probably in the, it was kind of right before Christmas, and yeah, I was probably in the high 50s or maybe even just crossing over into 60. So... the deal was I had set two target dates, and I had to reach, I think the first one I had to reach 150, and the second one, which was the final weigh-in, I had to reach 140 at those two weigh-in dates. And my brother held two checks in the name of, or rather in the amount of $500 each. And these checks, I'm not too proud to say, were going to be payable to my husband's ex-wife.
Okay.
So that would be the person that I really didn't want to be giving any more money to.
Right.
So that was the deal, and everything went along fine at first. And then my perception, or the way I was looking at it, was the first goal, I made the first goal, so that was good. First check was safe. Second goal, well, things weren't going quite as well. I was getting closer to my ultimate weight, and realistically, I think that I did not give myself enough time to realistically meet that goal. And so as I was progressing and I was seeing that I was getting closer to the date, and I really was working hard. I wasn't working hard, but I wasn't getting there, and I was getting really nervous, and I was getting really stressed, and the combination of stressing about it and not seeing the results that I was hoping to see, well, I lost it, and I begged out of the leverage with my brother, and he gave in, he caved, and
right.
I really, when we set it up, I didn't think he would, but by the point that I caved, I was really glad that he did, and so obviously it wasn't a very effective leverage.
Okay, so what did you learn from that particular leveraging strategy, and what would you suggest to someone else who may think that having a brother or a sister hold that kind of money or something along those lines? What would you suggest? What did you learn from it?
Well, I learned that for a leverage to be really, really powerful, first of all, it's got to scare the bejesus out of you. Not making your leverage has got to be really, really scary. There's got to be a consequence to it, or else it's not going to be worth it to you. And you have to know, not just think, you have to know that the person who's holding that check or whatever it is that you're leveraging is not going to let you loose, is not going to give you any slack. They're not going to cut you any breaks. Doesn't matter if you have PMS bloat. It doesn't matter if it was somebody's birthday. It doesn't matter if whatever. You have to know that that person's going to hold you to it no matter what.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't in place for me.
And if you're a member of Club Lifestyle, what else should you do if you set a big leverage like that?
You should talk to coach first.
At least just run it past me.
Exactly.
I mean, I see things a lot of times. I get people that are very, very excited sometimes when they come to me when they finally have the big leverage. Hey, I finally thought of it. And they put it out there and, you know, I don't mean to, but I end up shooting it down. And
mm-hmm.
But for very good reasons.
Right.
It's because I really want them to succeed, and I absolutely know they aren't if they don't have certain things in place. So, all right, great. So now we've got, so you came out the backside of this depressed, feeling feeling low.
Yeah, really feeling low.
So it actually, it worked the opposite of what we wanted.
Yes.
And not only did it not help, well, it helped the first half.
Mm-hmm.
But once the second half started sinking, not only did it not help the second half, it hurt.
It hurt a lot.
So let me ask you this. Is there a lesson for others who set a leverage and come out the backside with their tail between their legs that you would want to tell them? About perhaps perception, choices, how you decide you're going to feel?
Well, you know, so you fail, so you pick yourself up and can carry on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't beat yourself up over it. In my case, what I did do was, like I said, I felt really badly about it. I really felt that I let myself down. I was really felt that the whole thing was a bad experience, and I almost felt rebellious about it. See, it didn't work. See,
mm-hmm.
I knew it wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And see, look, it's not working. I've not only have I gained back the weight that I lost doing this leverage, but I'm so upset that I've gained even more back.
All right. And let me just stop you for a second, because one of the things that you know, you and I talked just before this interview that I wanted to bring out and that you agreed with is that there are many, many snapshots of a person as they go through a transformation.
Yes.
And if you just imagine, I talk about it in the book, and it's the snapshot that I'm talking about is, you know, if someone took a snapshot of you crawling out of bed in the morning
mm-hmm.
and they put that on a website, that this is what Chris looks like. Well, take a picture of Dave.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to look pretty bad.
Yep.
Face is all sagging. You know, your eyes are drooping. You got the sand out of your eyes yet. You look not...
So you've seen a picture of me then.
you don't look your best. But that's a snapshot of you.
Right.
It's not a lie. It's what you look like at that moment.
That's right.
And so as you've gone through this, you know, this was a particular snapshot of you, you know, at a point where if someone on the outside would have said at that moment, Chris, I noticed you came in at, you know, 240 and you had gotten down at one point to 160. How you doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
What would it have looked like to them with your answer being, I'm 170 pounds?
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have looked too good.
No, it wouldn't look good at all.
So as you're going through this journey, boom, here's a snapshot. I just took a Polaroid of you, and this Polaroid says Chris is 170 pounds. Now, there was a Polaroid in the beginning that said she weighed 240, mm-hmm. and there was another one at another point where she was 150, and another one at another point where she was 165,
mm-hmm.
and one just before the leverage started going south where she was 150 again.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's 170.
Right.
Snap, there's another Polaroid.
Right.
Snapshot, snapshot, snapshot.
Right.
Many snapshots taken along the journey, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely.
So you're coming out the backside. You're somewhat rebellious to it. You're kind of going, see, this doesn't work. It didn't work for me. I set a big leverage. It still didn't work. Then how'd you pull yourself out of this then? Did we come out the holidays?
Yep, we came out of the holidays. Holidays were great. Do you know how much food there is at a buffet at an all-you-can-eat restaurant?
Oh, you were in the mode where you were actually partaking of all that food.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So come back home, and now the scale says 172.
Okay.
I'm scared. I'm really scared. Now I've gone and done it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was scared enough to get scared straight, I guess.
Okay.
And that's, I guess, to me, what's been so enlightening about this whole process is that I started at 240. I made it to 150. I went back up to 160. I came back down to 150. I went back up to 170. I came back down. I'm not 240. I'm not even 200.
Mm-hmm.
As we spoke about earlier, I may have taken a step back, but not as far back. And each time I take a step back, it's not as far back as it was the last time. I keep progressing, and the falls are not as bad as they were.
Mm-hmm.
Or I catch myself before they get too bad.
Right. But you came out at 172 and you were scared.
I was really scared. I was really scared that after really 2 years of doing this program, that it was still so easy to fall back into those bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
But logically, I also know that for me and probably for most people who've fought a big weight challenge, I'm not talking with somebody who's got 10 pounds to lose or 15 pounds to lose, but somebody who's been obese, there are issues that you have with food. Then they don't go away overnight and they don't go away over 2 years.
Right.
They are a never-ending battle.
Right.
So I got to that 172 was, I guess, my uh-oh point. I had always, you know, when I crossed the 160 line, it was like, well, you know, I kind of maintain around 155, so 160 is really just 5 pounds past goal. But 172 was like, wow, we're hitting 20 pounds now. Yeah, it really scared me, and it really scared me into thinking, okay, I got to do something about this now, or it's going to get to 180 and 190. It would be too easy to get there.
Absolutely. All right. So that to you is kind of your trigger point for, no matter what, we've got to do something now.
Yeah.
All right. So what'd you do?
I went back to basics.
Went back to the basics. What do you mean?
I didn't have to learn anything new. I knew what. I know you've said this before. We've talked about it. We've seen it on the board. People talking about leanness lifestyle not working. Anybody who's fought weight and whose research diet programs or different ways of losing weight. I mean, nobody has to recreate the wheel here. We know what we need to do. Granted, I've learned a lot of stuff from this program, like basic knowledge about nutrition and exercise that I didn't have before. But we all basically know that in order to lose weight, we need to increase our activity and we need to eat properly, we need to eat healthfully. And I knew what had worked for me in the past, so I knew it was just a matter of getting back to that, getting back to consistent exercise and getting back to my 5 to 6 meals a day and doing that consistently. I knew that if I would do that, that I would get back to where I needed to be.
When you came back to the basics, did you use any of the tools again when you came back, or did you kind of do it, I'm going to start on the side here and not use the tools, and what'd you do?
I pretty much always used the tools for the last 2.5 years.
Okay.
I pretty much, now at the point where I'm at now, I don't use every single one of them, but
right.
I log my food daily, pretty much daily, 5 or 6 days a week. I log my activity most days. I log my weight every day. The basic tools that I've always used, I continue to use. They're very helpful to me as much now as then.
Now, so, you know, even I teach, and I've said this to anybody who will listen, and I'm, you know, even as I coach a boot camp as I am right now, I tell people that for the most part, what I teach is that we log for a while, but we don't necessarily log forever.
Right.
However, there are a fair number of people who once they get the logging and they really understand the tool and the software and so forth and it becomes easy, they have found when they have tested not logging versus logging without being, you know, compulsive about it, mm-hmm. that when they log, that just like you said, at least a certain number of days a week or at least coming back for a little while, that they simply do better.
Yeah.
I don't log. There's a fair number of people who after they do it for a while, they end up not having to do it again. Fine. But there's also a fair number of people, like you just said, who do log off and on or for periods of time or 4 or 5 days a week or whatever for a really long time. What benefit do you get after all this time? And like you said, you have a good understanding of what it takes to get the weight off and keep it off. So what do you get from using the tools after all this time?
As much as I feel that I have a good knowledge now of calories and stuff like that, and I can look at a plate of food and say, okay, that's about 150 calories for that chicken and maybe 70 calories worth of broccoli and half a baked yam, so that's about 100 calories. I can eyeball it that way. And that might work for a meal, but sometimes you need to put the whole day together to see what it's going to be like. That's the benefit that I get out of it. I think, okay, if I'm going to have this for breakfast, where do I need to tweak for the rest of my day to get my ratios in line and to hit the number of calories that I want to hit? Because you invariably forget something, or you don't remember a certain thing that you ate or that you wanted to eat. I just find it keeps me on track. I know... what I've eaten in a day, or if I'm creating a new recipe, if I'm putting something together, if there's a favorite food that I like and I'm trying to make it, adapt it to this lifestyle, I plug it into the nutrition analyzer and say, okay, that's a good meal, but it's a little high in carbs. How can I bring it up in protein? Okay, so I can see what my breakdowns are. I think, okay, well, like I was making a muffin recipe, and it was a little too high in carbs. I thought, okay, well, I can add a little bit more cottage cheese, or I can add a little bit more protein powder, and I can adjust my recipe. I can see it there. It's all in front of me. And I don't have to guess. So to me, that's the advantage.
You had mentioned earlier as well that, just like you said, people that are obese and that have been obese for a while have issues with food. Could be a full-blown addiction, could be emotional tools that need to be added to the toolbox and all that kind of good stuff. Could be a combination of a number of things.
Right.
One of the things that I'm very almost military about is the fact that people try to oversimplify this process of weight loss into a 5-word diet.
Right.
And as you had mentioned earlier, the mindset is that we all already know what to do. But
right.
But the reality is that telling someone, you know, eat less and exercise more, doesn't work.
Nope.
It never works because it is a complex issue. And why people eat, why they don't exercise, how can they build these things into their life? How can they create foods they are going to like into their lifestyle? How can they become active and find things that they like to do? And if it is all about calories in and calories out, then why don't we just eat 1,200 calories of sugar?
Right.
Why don't we just eat 1,200 calories of lard?
Right.
Why do we do this? Why do we do that? What about timing? What about nutrient density? What about, on and on and on. It's extremely complex. And then when you add in the emotional component and you add in the addiction component and you add in about 500 other components that can possibly rear their ugly head, it can be incredibly complex. So, but the mindset is that it's common sense. Any idiot ought to be able to figure this out. The reality is that 66% of Americans, at least, Canada's not far behind us. Mm-hmm. Other countries are following in our footsteps. 66% of Americans are overweight or obese. But I don't think 66% of Americans are stupid.
Nope.
I don't think 66% of Americans have no common sense.
Nope.
So if it's so damn easy, why are 66% of Americans overweight?
That's right.
Just go out and stand on a rooftop and tell them calories in and calories out and watch how many of them change.
Well, I see it in my office. We see it everywhere. People who are trying to lose weight, eating, you know, really high-carb processed diet meals on a regular basis. I mean, nobody ever tells them you really need to eat a lot more veggies.
You know,
nobody tells them if you you get a whole plate full of veggies for that little quarter cup of rice, people don't understand how to put their meals together. And no, I absolutely agree.
And you know,
if it were easy, everybody would be slim.
And the other thing is that not only are the mechanical issues of, you know, like you said, just giving two examples of about 1,000, mm-hmm. you know, substitute, you know, more veggies for the starchy carbs and mm-hmm. the sugary carbs and do this and do that. Those are mechanical issues.
Mm-hmm.
But how about just simple compliance?
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep going 3 days after you said, I'm going to do it? How do you keep going on the fourth day?
Yeah.
How do you keep going on the fifth week?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Those are the issues, too, that people don't really look at. The calories in, just eat less and exercise more, five-word diet, doesn't talk about how do you keep going after the third day.
No, it's true. Your resolve is always really strong when you've got a full stomach.
Yeah, the resolve is always strong when you have a full stomach. So true.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think we are good at here, and that we've got a lot of room for improvement, but I think we are good at, and that I've tried to really make the program be good at, is helping people to be their greatest motivator, their own best motivator.
Yeah.
Self-motivation and developing external motivators through leveraging and camps and team participation and about a dozen other ways
mm-hmm.
to assist. But by improving the external motivation over time and keeping someone's attention long enough, it's always been my goal to teach self-motivation. And there's no eat less and exercise more five-word diet that even comes close to getting into any of that stuff. And that's where it really gets to be complex. To me, that's what separates the men from the boys.
Absolutely.
When it comes to these kinds of programs. Let's get you to where you are today.
Okay.
So you come out the backside. You get back to the basics.
Yep.
You're coming back down. We are approaching spring of 05.
Right.
Well, what are we doing? Let's get there.
What we're doing is we're, like we said, we're
basics.
Getting back to basics.
Okay.
But now we're saying, okay, you know what? We really want to get there, and what are we willing to do to get there?
All right, so you've been to 150 before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where, again, this is what separates, you know, the kind of the men from the boys, the women from the girls. What
mm-hmm.
did you do when you saw that 150 again on the scale? Where was your head this time, and how did you break through it?
I guess it's all mindset. Ultimately, that's what I think it always is. It's where you are and what you're going to do to get there. Myself included, you hear people all the time. I hear it from my friends. They want to know, geez, Chris, you lost even more weight. How did you do it? Well, I do this and I do this and I exercise 5 days a week and I eat clean, healthy foods 5 days, 7 days a week. I don't eat what you guys are all eating. I don't drink beer on the weekends. I don't have hot dogs. Oh, well, I couldn't do that. It's too much effort. I couldn't do that. I remember a girlfriend saying to me, she said, geez, you know, you've lost so much more weight. What size clothing are you wearing now? I said, I'm wearing a size 5. She goes, I could never wear a size 5. And I looked at her, and before I could even say, yes, you could, she said, no, let me rephrase. I'm not willing to do what it takes to wear a size 5.
Well, she at least had a wherewithal to be honest about it.
No, she's very honest about it.
Yeah.
And that's what it boils down to. What are you willing to do to get there? Was it always comfortable? I mean, I did this through the summer months when I was attending barbecues, when I was going to social functions. You know, you're with your friends a lot more. You're outdoors. You're doing stuff. All the things that, you know, sitting around on patios, having a beer. It was a tough time of the year to do it. But what was I willing to do to get there? And what was the reward? Well, when we put in our swimming pool this year and we had our friends over for a pool party, I was real proud to be in my bikini.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth it. It was so worth it.
What did you put any leverage up for this particular period this time to get past the 150 into the 143-ish?
No, I didn't. It was in my head. It was me who wanted it bad enough. No, there was no leverage this time.
What did you have as a vision in your head to carry you past the sticking point? What do you think? What do you think it was? Or what do you think? When I say what do you think, I'm pretty sure it wasn't one thing either, but what was in your mind where basically, I mean, let's face it, 150 was a sticking point for you.
Yep.
So what did you have, what did you envision, what did you use to visualize to get yourself past that point? Why did you not stick at 149? Mechanically, that's already covered.
Yeah.
We already know why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as one of the things I want to mention, too, is just, it's so easy to kind of get into this trap of when people ask you what you did,
mm-hmm.
to just tell them all the mechanical things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Well, I eat 5 meals a day, and I exercise, 8-9 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, but you did a lot more than that mentally.
Yeah, I did. I don't know.
And I'm not saying necessarily during this period, but throughout your 2.5 years, your mental adjustment has been substantial.
Yeah, it really has.
And it took a tremendous shift in your mindset and how you're able to focus and how you're able to kind of channel everything to do what you do, to be able to do it. It's not just the mechanics. It's not just, I eat 5 meals a day and I make sure I get my veggies in and I make sure I exercise 8 hours. Yeah, but how do you keep doing that?
Yeah.
So nothing in particular. It was more just a want to look good for the summer. This time I'm really going to do it. I have enough experience at failing, and this time I'm not going to.
I think it was just, like I said, the fear of the 172 and how easy it was to get back there, and just the thought that, you know what, I've been really mucking around with this for a good year now, where I'd wake up on Monday morning and think, man, why did I eat the way I did this weekend? Why did I, I was tired of feeling that way. I just wanted to get past it, and I've always said, I don't know if I can live there, but I want to get there, and I want to see what it feels like to be there. I think that's what just pushed me through this time. It's just the desire to finally see if I was capable of it.
Got it. Well, it does take a number of attempts for 98.5% of people, and it takes, for 100% of people, it takes it more than one attempt to get there and stay there. There's not one person that I've ever run across who has gotten there and stayed there on their very first pass. And I mean very first pass.
No.
It's great. And, it's what's interesting, and one of the things that I don't mind pointing out at all, and just kind of letting you, I keep pressing you for what was it, because the thing is, at 172... See, you cut off the edge, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
You cut the edge off when you were in the low 160s.
Mm-hmm.
That fear, I understand that at 172. I think anybody listening is going to understand that. But at 160 flat or 159,
mm-hmm.
the edge was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
That fear was gone. It's like, okay, I'm not back there anymore. I'm back into my zone.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. The mindset, there was a mindset, no matter what. I don't think you've even really crystallized it yet, and that's okay. There is a mindset that took you below the 150, and I think you've told us what it is, and that is just that you were really just going to touch it this time.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't come just because you said, I'm really going to touch it this time.
No.
Because you had said that before.
Yes.
What happened was you had experience, more experience now, and one of the things that I want to point out, and I tell people over and over again, Chris, neither you or anyone else. See, you covered the same ground again,
mm-hmm.
but you weren't starting over.
No.
You were coming at it with a different perspective, a different mindset, and with, with experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience and the shift in mindset was enough in this particular instance, plus that burning desire just to see what it really felt like,
mm-hmm.
to carry you all the way through. So you covered the same ground, but you weren't the same person as you covered it.
No, I think you're right. And I think, a lot of it is you're right.
I can tell that you weren't even sure yourself, even doing this interview, and that's what makes these interviews real, because they are real. That, you know, they're not scripted with the respect that I don't know what you're going to say.
Right.
I know what I'm going to ask you, but I don't know what you're going to say.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't a huge leverage this time.
Right.
But what did the huge leverage do for you, even the one that failed? Well, it still gave you experience.
Yes.
And you came out the backside with a certain set of skills and tools and knowledge and things you could draw from and understand and learn from. And you came at it again, yes. Covering the same ground, but not the same person.
No, you're right. And I think it's as though every time I've covered the ground, it's ingrained a little deeper in my brain.
Right. That's exactly right.
It becomes a little harder to go back to the way it was. And as others have said, as I progress through my sizes, I get rid of my clothes, the bigger clothes, so that if I do, and I do, mess up once in a while or get a little bit beyond my where I'm comfortable and the clothes start getting tight again, it's easier to say, okay, it's easier for some reason to get back to it. In the old days, it would have been, well, I've blown it now, I might as well give up.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen so much anymore, or it happens for a much shorter period of time. And then it seems to be easier to get back on track. Because you know what? It feels good to feel good.
Oh, yes. Very much.
It feels really good.
And that's a wish that I have for a lot of people who have not made it to a point where their transformation has really gotten them to that feeling. Because yeah. When they can experience that, it really becomes a motivating force in the background, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But until you've experienced it, you really don't know what you're missing.
You really don't.
Or if the last time you missed it, you were 9 years old, because you've been heavy ever since then. It's been so long for most people; they're just like,
yeah.
I don't even know. Well, let's conclude this with a couple of questions here.
Sure.
You have lost about 100 pounds.
Yes, I mean, have.
The number of people that do that is infinitesimally small. I mean, that's outstanding. So this is a snapshot of you even today.
Yes.
Click. You know, I just took a picture of you, 100 pounds down. Mm-hmm. As you think about this being a snapshot,
mm-hmm.
and not really necessarily a true reflection of the whole Chris,
right?
And what's inside, how do you feel about your fitness future? I mean, do you imagine there will be periods where snapshots of you will have you looking like you just crawled out of bed in the morning?
No,
are you always going to be kind of in this superstar mode where I'll be able to come to you 3 months from now and take another snapshot and you'll be here? What do you think?
I'd like to think that I would be. But realistically, I know that there will be periods of time where I might not look as I do right now, but I don't think there's going to be a huge variance from where I am now. I wanted to reach this point to see what it would feel like, and I often said that, you know, I wanted to reach 15% body fat, and I wanted to see what that felt like. And maybe I wouldn't live there, but it would be nice to see what it looked like. Well, I like living here. I like it a lot. And what it's now taking to keep me here is not such a high price to pay. Does that mean that I'm not going to, you know, will I be perfect all the time? No, I know I won't be. I haven't been. Even now, I haven't been. But I make my way back. So, sure, there might be periods, but I see that as a challenge. Let's see where I am in 3 months. I'd like to say I'm going to be here.
I always tell people that, you know, they're in a kayak by themselves on a river, never a lake.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always paddling that's going to be required to hold your position.
Right.
Pull your paddle up out of the water, you float downstream, which is weight gain.
Yeah.
Paddle hard enough to hold your position, that's maintenance.
Yeah.
Paddle hard enough to go upstream, you're losing weight.
Yeah.
You're in a maintenance phase now, and just as you said, it doesn't require to paddle as hard.
Right.
That doesn't mean you're ever going to get to stop paddling, does it?
No, I recognize that.
Yeah.
I recognize that. And for somebody like me, I'm probably going to be paddling a little bit more than... I'm going to be paddling kind of hard to stay here. And that's okay. You don't gain 100 pounds overnight. And it's for me, I know it's not going to be, I hear a lot of people say, you know, it becomes routine. Sure, it's routine, but it's not always easy.
That's right.
And I accept that it's not always going to be easy. But the sacrifice is worth the result. I believe that. And that's not to say I won't mess up and have my bad days. But I plan on sticking pretty close to this point.
You know, you mentioned, too, that, you know, it's not that you're always perfect on given days, but that you come back. And I would just say this. You're never perfect.
No.
No one is.
No.
I'm not.
No.
You know, I don't know anyone who is. But no. The cool thing about this is that you can be outstanding as you are being imperfect.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not that you can never have, you know, a particular whatever. Now, don't get me wrong. I talk a lot about food addiction and trigger foods to people these days because mm-hmm. it's such a massive force in so many people's lives.
Right.
There truly are foods that some people never are going to get to have ever again.
Right.
It's like the alcoholic.
Right.
I'm not going to get into that, but for the most part, you know, perfection is never, ever, I don't care what stage you're in, ever required.
No.
Okay. Well, Chris, what would you say, what do you want to say in closing here to the people? This is, until you're probably, you know, standing on stage somewhere or receiving an award for the world's most outstanding Canadian physique or something along those lines, this could be our last interview. And so what do you want to say to anybody who is in your shoes, is the 240 pounds you were when you started, or is the person who has gone up and down, up but not as much and down again, up but not as much and down again? At any point in time, it was one of the snapshots of you before you arrived at this point.
I guess what I want to say is it's always a process. If it's something that you want badly enough, you've got to be willing to make the sacrifices to get there. It's not always easy. This is a great venue, though. I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I couldn't have done it without the club. First of all, for the knowledge, like the true knowledge of diet and exercise that I gained. But I would say at least half of that is because of the support of the club, the forum, the people there, the accessibility to you, Dave, to bounce things off of, because nobody knows transformation like you do. I believe that. And, yeah, you're right. You're not always perfect, and you don't need to always be perfect. You just need to make progress. For me, it's been a journey for the last 2.5 years. I've tried so many things. Nothing has ever stuck for me before. Even when I started with Leanness Lifestyle, I set some pretty lofty goals for myself. And I didn't believe myself that I would make them. And I did, and I blew them away. And I still have a hard time sometimes remembering where I've come from. And the day that you put those pictures up, and I actually got to see the side-by-side for the first time, well, you can probably hear it, pretty emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process, and it's definitely one worth going through. The result has been phenomenal and really has been life-changing. Truly has been life-changing.
Well, Chris, I can't thank you enough for taking time to do this interview with me. I already know, even before pushing the stop button on the recording, that, you know, what we've talked about, what you've said on both of these interviews is really going to help a lot of people for a long time to come, because these kinds of interviews, they don't become outdated, because this process, although it's ever evolving, the personal stories and transformations and journeys, just like the one you shared, are never outdated, because there are going to be a lot of people that are going to relate to everything you've said or pieces of what you've said, and you just don't know who you are going to help that you will never meet. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us and helping people see the real journey that is transformation. And I look forward to you being with us for many years to come and watching you and taking those snapshots of you along the way. And I just want to thank you for being such a great member and doing this and helping us.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, have a good night, and we'll speak to you later.
Okay.
Goodbye now.
Bye-bye.